We're back with Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. A newly released study says instead of bringing a lot of money to Wisconsin, Foxconn, the Taiwan-based corporation that's building a manufacturing center in Racine County, could depress economic activity in the state by tens of billions of dollars over the next 15 years. The company is slated to earn economic subsidies from state government if it meets hiring and investment goals, but a study by a free market research center at George Mason University says subsidies don't work. WUWM's innovation reporter Chuck Kornbach asked the study's co-author Matthew Mitchell why his Virginia University was interested in the Wisconsin doings of Foxconn.
So there's a couple reasons. One, you know, I'm interested in what we call the economics of favoritism. Economists sometimes call it rent seeking, but it's basically private entities seeking privilege from government. And of course, targeted economic development incentives are rife with privilege seeking. And, you know, the specific case of Foxconn is interesting because it is such a large targeted economic development incentive. And we've seen these incentives grow in recent years about three times as a share of GDP. States and localities are giving out about three times as much in incentives now than they were in the 1990s. And we've seen a number of high-profile cases, Foxconn being among them. So it seemed like an interesting case to explore. And, you know, what it turns out is the way these subsidies are often sold really doesn't line up with economic understanding of the way subsidies actually work.
You've looked quite a bit at this concept of targeted versus general economic support. Can you sort of walk us through that, please?
Sure. So, you know, if you're thinking about, if you're a policymaker and you want to develop your economy, you are wise to recognize that any job or business or investment that's made in your state could have been made in another state. And of course, policymakers are keenly aware of this. They're in fierce competition with one another over jobs and capital and investment. And that's great. That's fine. But they have different ways of trying to compete for those economic factors. And so one strategy is to target particular firms or industries with special privilege. They'll cut a targeted tax privilege for those firms. They'll offer outright subsidies. Sometimes they'll do something in between, like a tax that is a refundable tax credit that amounts to a subsidy. But often policymakers seem to labor under the belief that this is the only way to attract business activity to their locations. But it's not. There is another method, which is to just make sure that your business environment is the best in which to do business, and also it's the best in which to live. So, you know, make sure the taxes are reasonable and non-discriminatory and relatively low, that regulations do what they need to do to keep the public safe but aren't overly burdensome. Make sure that genuine public goods are funded and that government doesn't spend too much money funding activities that aren't genuine public goods. So basically just make sure that it's the right environment in which to do business. And I would argue that there's a lot more evidence that that is an effective strategy for growth than targeted favors or privileges for particular firms or industries. The problem, of course, from a policymaker's perspective, is a general strategy does not allow them to stand in front of a particular factory and cut a ribbon or start digging the foundation with a golden shovel. So it's a little bit harder to claim credit for those types of things, but the evidence seems to suggest that they actually work better.
And there was quite a groundbreaking, including involving President Trump, then Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, for Foxconn in the Racine County community of Mount Pleasant, where a lot of the buildings are starting to go up. And I think we should remind folks about the size of the potential targeted investment for Foxconn. It's in the billions of dollars, isn't it?
That's right. It's potentially up to about $3.6 billion over the next 15 years. So this is orders of magnitude larger than any typical subsidy. I mean, literally hundreds of times, maybe even thousands of times larger than a lot of subsidies that states give out.
And you're arguing in your paper, you and your colleagues, are that the subsidy Foxconn may get may depress state economic activity in Wisconsin by tens of billions of dollars over the next 15 years. How do you reach that conclusion?
Yeah, so there's a couple of factors that are important. One is that we need to account for the fact that in most cases, subsidies do not seem to affect a business's location decision. There have been about 34 peer-reviewed academic studies of this where economists have tried to assess the likelihood that a subsidy affected a location decision. And the best estimate is that subsidies are decisive in affecting location decisions somewhere between 2 and 25% of the time. So if Foxconn was going to invest in Wisconsin anyway, then the subsidy is a waste. If, on the other hand, it was decisive, then great, it was an investment that paid off. But we have no way of knowing. You know, Foxconn has an incentive to say that it was completely decisive. The policymakers who handed out the subsidy have an incentive to say it's completely decisive. But the best evidence is that these things are really only decisive in 2 to 25% of the time. So you need to discount the gross payoff from the subsidy based on that factor. And so when you do that, the benefits from the subsidy are much, much smaller. At the same time, the advocates of subsidies, if they sort of fail to mention this factor of the decisiveness, they also fail to mention any cost associated with subsidies. And as it turns out, you know, the $3.6 billion or up to $3.6 billion that the state will spend to subsidize Foxconn has to be drawn from the economy in the first place. And it would have done some benefit to the Wisconsin people if left in their pockets. They, too, would have been able to invest it, start their own businesses, purchase more products and services, all sorts of activities that would benefit the economy. So when you account, this is a well-studied phenomenon, the effect of taxation on economic activity. So when you account for that factor, there's a big gross cost. So really, the net effect of the subsidy needs to take those two factors into account. And when you do, under realistic scenarios, this could cost the Wisconsin economy billions of dollars.
I think you even argue that if the Foxconn deal had not gone through, Wisconsin might have looked at things like cutting sales taxes, cutting business taxes as other ways to improve the economy.
Yeah, that's right. So just, you know, to put it in perspective, absent this subsidy for one firm, the state could have reduced its corporate income tax rate by about 22%. And that's a tax that's paid by some 16,000 firms in the state of Wisconsin. So you can imagine how much economic activity could have happened absent this privilege for one firm if the state had pursued a more general policy.
Well, reporters heard Governor Scott Walker say it probably a couple dozen times that if Foxconn doesn't come up with the jobs or the investment, then there isn't much of a way in a state subsidy. Does your study take that safeguard into account?
We do. And so the interesting thing is, so, you know, Foxconn originally was planning on building a large 10.5, they called it Generation 10.5 plant. That means that they were going to make large LCD displays. As it turns out, it's looking much more likely that they will build a Generation 6 plant, which makes smaller LCD displays. That means about one quarter of the investment, about one quarter of the local population hired. So it's a much smaller investment. And as it turns out, that actually is probably a good thing for the state of Wisconsin. So, you know, the irony here is a lot of people are characterizing it as, oh, that's so embarrassing for the state that Foxconn sold them on a Generation 10.5 plant, but they're only building a Generation 6 plant. Actually, I think this is a blessing in disguise. It reduces the footprint of the subsidy quite a bit, and as a result, it reduces the amount of estimated economic loss for the state. So if they had built the Generation 10.5 plant, you know, there was a chance that they would have cost the state of Wisconsin somewhere between $10 and $20 billion over the next 15 years. Now it's a much lower range. It's somewhere between $1.2 and about $6 billion loss over the next 15 years. So actually, this is quite a blessing in disguise, in my view.
In the meantime, construction companies are at work in Mount Pleasant, trucking companies, roads have been rebuilt, money has been spent. Hasn't that brought some benefit, or are you saying that not as much benefit as other policies?
Yeah, so there's no question that when, you know, new economic activity is spurred, that's a benefit. Of course, that means that the folks who are building the roads and building the factory, they are getting an income, but then they're also turning around and spending some of that money elsewhere, and that benefits the economy. So there's no question, we call that a multiplier effect. There's no question that that is real and beneficial. The point, however, is that you can't just pretend that the money that funds that activity is like manna from heaven. It has to be drawn from the Wisconsin economy in the first place. And, you know, that money, if left in the pockets of Wisconsin taxpayers, they too would have gone out and spent or invested or done other things with that money, and that too would have created economic benefit. So you have to take account of the opportunity cost, that is, what else could have been done with that money. And then you also have to take account of the fact that in most cases, it seems like these investments would have been made anyway, whether they were subsidized or not.
I'm going to ask you to add a political scientist hat to your economist one.
Uh-huh.
We are within a year of the 2020 election, and Donald Trump has made the Foxconn property and project a big part of his efforts in Wisconsin. Do you expect this economic debate to continue as the presidential race continues here?
I do. And, you know, it's interesting. There is evidence that politicians benefit from handing out targeted subsidies. And the real reason appears to be not, you know, there's some benefit, of course, because the firms that receive them are able to essentially advertise for the policymakers. But I think probably the best evidence is that the public at large thinks that these things work. So I think economists have their work cut out for them in convincing folks that actually, you know, the best evidence suggests that these targeted economic development incentives really don't work, or at least not work as advertised. So that's, I suppose that's a little bit on me and my fellow economists. But there is, in my view, some evidence that the public is weary of this. I think Amazon's pullout from New York is evidence of this. I think you would probably be in a better position than I to know this, but I think the popularity of Foxconn in Wisconsin is waning a bit. Some of these really big, high-profile subsidies just haven't worked out quite as well as people thought they were. And, you know, I think the public has, there is a limit to their patience with these types of things. They only want to see them if they think that it's going to benefit the broader community, but they really don't love the idea of spending taxpayer money on, you know, wealthy and well-connected businesses.
I think the polling in Wisconsin showed the further away you were from Racine County, the less support you had for the Foxconn project. Does that sound about right then?
That sounds absolutely right. And, you know, that's a big part of it is you can do a cost-benefit analysis where you only look at the benefits of the subsidies to the community that receives them. And there's no question those communities are better off for the subsidy, but they aren't the ones who are paying for it on net, right? You know, the whole state is saddled with this, and there really is very little evidence that the broader communities that pay for subsidies benefit from them.
Still, you don't sound optimistic that subsidies are going away. Every state pretty much offers them, right? But you're saying do it in a smarter way.
Yeah, I mean, I would say don't do it in a targeted way. There's no reason to privilege particular firms or industries. That's not a road to prosperity. And economists really have known this for quite a long time. Essentially, the mercantilist system in the 17th and 18th century was rejected by economists for this very reason, that targeted benefits and privileges to particular firms or industries is not a path to prosperity. I would also add it's not really a very equitable policy. Those who benefit tend to be larger multinational companies that are relatively more profitable. Those who pay are, you know, general taxpayers who have higher burdens and have less prosperous economies as a result of this. But the political incentive to hand these out is pretty strong. So I do think they're going to be around until policymakers figure out a way to sort of mutually disarm in the subsidy war. I think there is a precedent being set right now. In Kansas City, the communities right around Kansas City on both the Missouri and Kansas side have agreed to mutually disarm in the subsidy war. I could see something like that on a grander scale actually solving this problem, where states formed, you know, interstate compacts or regional compacts where they agreed not to subsidize firms to relocate from one state to another.
We're not completely sure, but it looks like Foxconn will be around Wisconsin. Wisconsin's newer governor, Tony Evers, has said, listen, even if it's 1,000 jobs, Foxconn is welcome here. We support any new jobs here. Is that pretty much all the current governors can say when handed in something by their predecessors?
You know, I don't know the full legal scope that the governor has to try to reverse this. The subsidy actually was enacted through the legislature. So I think if he really wanted to try to eliminate the whole thing, he'd have to go back to the legislature and try to override it. And I doubt he has the patience or is willing to try to do that at this point. He's probably just pursuing what makes sense to him and politically.
Matthew Mitchell is an economist at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. He spoke with WUWM's Chuck Kornbach, and there's a link to the study at WUWM.com.